Welcome to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga. I'm joined by our Tribe beat writer, Paul Hoynes, the sports writer most likely to get traded in a Vegas airport. Paul, good to hear from you.
How you doing, Joe?
Doing well. You survived the trip, survived the week at the winter meetings, and it all sort of hit there on the last day. We have a trade, a big one. The Indians sending Edwin Encarnacion to Seattle in a three-way deal. Yandy Diaz goes to Tampa Bay, and the Indians get back Carlos Santana and the Rays' young outfield first base prospect, Jake Bowers. Paul, tell us about the trade. Tell us how things went down and what you heard and really who won the trade.
Yeah, it was interesting, Joe. You know, the Indians, the whole front office, they had like a 7:30 flight, a.m. flight out of Vegas on Thursday morning. And, you know, a bunch of reporters were on it. But I stayed at the meetings to cover the Rule 5 draft. So I'm right in the middle of the Rule 5. The Rule 5 draft had just started about noon Cleveland time, 9 o'clock out there. And, you know, I see that Santana has been traded, or, you know, Santana's coming back to Cleveland, and it just kind of unfolded from there. I don't know who the Indians drafted or lost in the Rule 5 draft. I was just, you know, concentrating on that, and, you know, fortunately, you know, unfortunately I couldn't get a hold of the Indians. Their flight had taken off.
And, right, they were in the air with no Wi-Fi. And no tech. The worst possible time to complete a trade, I guess.
Oh my God! It doesn't matter for the front office guys, but if you're in the media trying to track it down, and you know Zach Meisel and TJ Zuppi and I think Ryan Lewis. Yeah, Ryan Lewis were all on the flight, and their Wi-Fi wasn't working. They had them right there. They had a captured audience and a captive audience, but they couldn't write anything until the Wi-Fi came on. So
worst time to make a trade if you're a GM. When you're in the middle of a flight with no Wi-Fi, or whether you're in a hospital bed with a blood clot in your lung. Either way, that's what Jerry DePoto was hospitalized as he's completing the trade.
Yeah, the GMs, they don't let a little thing like a blood clot stop them from making a deal.
Jeez.
But, so it was interesting, and the rest of the day was kind of a blur. You know, I was able to hook up with Antonetti on the flight. You know, we texted back and forth so I could get some quotes and just get a little bit of his take on it, on one of the rewrites that I had. So, so it worked out. As for the trade, I guess from the Indians' point of view, they save some money this year. I think they save, I want to say, maybe 10 to 12 million this year, take on 14 million next year. Mm-hmm. Or I should say 2019, they saved about $10 million, take on $14 million in payroll in 2020. Seattle is picking up $6 million of Santana's $35 million contract, or what's left of the deal.
And that's $2 million in 19 and $4 million in 20, correct?
Right. So
because his contract is backloaded, isn't it? It's like
it was backloaded. I think the total is like 35 with the buyout. And Yandy, you know, so we know Santana, you know, and we know Encarnacion. Encarnacion, I feel bad for him. He's kind of stranded out there, on the far edge of the world or the United States and on a rebuilding team, and this could be his last year. I'm wondering, Joe, if they're just going to flip him again, you know, try mm-hmm. to, you know, I would, that would be my take on it.
That seems to be the common, understanding of this. And you had written that, Tampa had shown an interest in him in the first place. So
right.
maybe that's a spot where he winds up. If not, you know, before the start of the season, at some point during the season, he could wind up, if not with Tampa, then some other contender that needs a bat.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's a good way to look.
But he's definitely not staying in Seattle. That's not in their plan, I don't think.
Yeah. And, so we didn't – and, you know, Yandy Diaz, we never really got to see him play, you know. I'm wondering if this is Jesus Aguilar too, you know. And I mean, I think Yandy got more chances than Jesus did.
Mm-hmm. You
know, and what we saw was a guy that was a line drive hitter, so far hasn't been able to adjust to start pulling the ball and driving it out of the park, but and still a guy without a position, you know, in talking to Haim Bloom, the VP of baseball operations for the Rays, he didn't know where they were going to play him. He thought, you know, he liked Yandy's versatility, but they just didn't have a spot, you know, carved out for him. But so I think Yandy's going to probably find himself in a similar position, you know, where he's going to play first base, third base, you know, second base. I'm not sure, but you know, I know they like his bat. They were looking for right-handed power. And you know they're kind of loading up. You know they got Charlie Morton.
Right.
Now they get Yandy. They won 90 games last year. I think they're gonna try to make a run in the AL East. You know they surprised people last year. They're not gonna do that again this year or this coming season.
And they also add Cole Sulzer, a AAA reliever from the Indians organization. You know I think he was something like 47 appearances last year with about 95 strikeouts in 51 innings. So, I mean, this is a guy, he's a strikeout pitcher out of the bullpen.
And yeah. And
like Tampa needs another strikeout arm out of the bullpen.
Yeah, jeez. And this is a guy that I'm pretty sure he's the same kid that came to his first big league camp last year, and he had got hurt. I think he's from Columbus. Or from Ohio, if he's the same guy, maybe I got it wrong, but he got hurt. He missed all of, you know, he couldn't, you know, participate in his first big league camp, and he had to, you know, kind of take a seat. He got hurt working out or something.
I think Eric Stamets is the one who's from Dublin, Ohio.
Yeah.
Sulzer, you know, the whole trade turns on Sulzer being a lights out guy out of the bullpen for them. And that's the most ridiculous thing.
Yeah. You know, and then, they also, the Indians also sent them their, compensation, their lottery pick.
I think that pick went to Seattle.
Yeah. In the 77th pick in the draft, in June. So,
well, don't worry. The Indians will be getting plenty of compensatory picks this year when their free agents start signing, like Brantley and Miller, and they
right,
you know, depending on how much they sign for. If Brantley signs for over 50, they'll get a first round pick there, or a sandwich pick in the first round. So
yeah,
you know, so all in all, did this trade make the Indians better or give the Indians more opportunities to do things down the road?
Yeah, I think the latter, Joe. I don't think they're a better club today than they were yesterday before the deal. I think, Yandy's gone. Does Yandy and Bowers cancel out? Bowers has a little more power, it looks like. But, you know, he hasn't played
a lot. He's a little better launch angle, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Because Yandy Diaz had a better exit velocity on balls in play average than Manny Machado and Mike Trout last year. Yandy was up around 92 miles an hour, and Machado and Trout were 91 miles an hour. But, yeah, like you said, Bowers hits more home runs.
Yeah. And, you know, Encarnacion, Santana, you know, Encarnacion has, you know, traditionally shown more power, driven in more runs. You know, Santana's probably a better defensive player. So, you know, I don't think that makes you better. That's kind of a wash, you know. So I think this payroll flexibility maybe sets them up to do another trade. Maybe they trade Yonder Alonso, Bowers and Santana basically pretty much could do the same thing, you know, play, you know, first base, DH. And, I mean, you could, if they get desperate, they could even put, you know, Carlos in the outfield as they did in the World Series. So, I don't know if that's something they want to do every day, but
oh boy! I mean, Carlos is—he's a Dominican guy, and you know the Dominican mantra is play every day, be in the lineup every day. And Carlos is every day.
Yeah,
so he's going to be your everyday first baseman. I think you're literally going to have to pull him out of that spot. So that means Bowers has got to play left field.
Yeah, I would think. You know, that sounds like it to me, and then. Either you keep Alonso as a DH, or or you go looking for another kind of, like we were talking before the podcast came on, maybe a middle of the order hitter, maybe. And then how do you get that guy? I guess the focus goes back on, trading a Kluber or a Bauer.
Well, and I guess what this does is it makes it so that you've moved Edwin's $25 million, sort of off the ledger there, and it frees you up to make that trade for Kluber or Bauer and put your heel in the ground and demand the highest return possible for them and not budge off of that. You don't have to attach Kipnis's salary or somebody else to that and lessen the return that you would get for Kluber or Bauer. You can basically say, here they are, and it's the sun, moon, and stars, or there's no deal, and you go into the season with a top three rotation in all of baseball.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Joe. That's really a good point. Because I don't think they were, it doesn't seem like they've come off what they want for both those guys. I mean, just from, what you read and who you talk to, I think they're still, the asking price is very high on Kluber and Bowers, as it should be. And, I think right, like now they've got that, they've saved some money. They've saved about $10 million, according to the Indians, for this season. So now you can maybe that is enough to satisfy ownership and still put a competitive team on the field. I still think you still need some help in the outfield. You still need some help in the bullpen. You probably need, and I'm just listening to Francona's tone when he talked to the media at the winter meetings. I think they'll probably go after a backup catcher too.
Okay, we'll get to their needs there in a second. I just wanted to go back and touch one more time on Edwin. The Indians signed Edwin. He's the highest paid player in franchise history with the contract that they signed for his free agent deal before the 2017 season. They brought him in, and he did what Edwin does. He hit 30 home runs and drove in 100 runs for the two seasons that he played for them. Did they get what they expected and wanted out of Edwin? And tell me one thing that you will take away from Edwin's 2 years in here in Cleveland, one interaction or anything, and I'll throw mine at you, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I think they got exactly what they wanted. The only thing they didn't get out of it was a World Series championship. After reaching Game 7 of the World Series in 2016, this was their big move in 2017. Get a bat, get a guy to hit in the middle of the lineup, and he did that. He played almost every day, I think some people will say he wasn't the clutchest guy in the world, that he didn't carry the team for a stretch of a week or 10 days like some power hitters do, but he was a power hitter, and they're streaky. Historically, I think every power hitter is streaky. And, this guy did what he did, and, I mean, did what he always does. And he was great in the clubhouse, I thought, it was fun to see him interact with all the younger Latin players. With Ramirez sat right next to him, Eric Gonzalez sat next to him. He took care of those guys. And I remember, when they got eliminated by the Astros in the ALDS, Jose had a terrible series and terrible, last four weeks of the season, and he didn't want to talk to us, and Encarnacion made him talk, so that's leadership. I think that's what you're looking for from your veteran guys, to show how you're supposed to do it. And I'll never forget, he had that deep voice, and early in the season, he hit that inside the park home run against the Angels, the second or third game of the season. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting there, and we're waiting on him, and he turns around and talks, and he goes, "What's cooking?"
What's cooking? That was great. That inside the park home run was just a fantastic moment. April 3rd, this past year, hit one off the wall and ran for days. I think he surprised himself coming all the way around the bases. Hammy's call was hilarious.
Yeah,
without the oxygen.
Usain Bolt, didn't he call him Usain? Something like that.
I will remember back. I went on the road with them in Texas, and it's the last game of the series Sunday morning, and the night before Saturday, I get back to the hotel room, and I'm flipping through Instagram, and there's a post on Instagram from Edwin Encarnacion's account. And it's the toilet in his hotel room. And it's a video of Edwin talking to the toilet and telling it, you know, I have to pee or I have to. And the toilet's automated and it was responding to his voice and it was flushing or it was the lid was lifting or whatever. And he was getting the biggest kick out of this automated toilet in his room. And, you know, I'm standing there, I'm talking to a couple other reporters, I'm talking to Andre and all that, and I'm showing him this video, and we're dying laughing, and he's sitting over by his locker. And I'm like, how do I go up to a guy and interview him and ask him about his video that he made of his toilet? I didn't do it because it was just like the most awkward and uncomfortable thing, but I thought to myself, man, you know, this is – He's the $20 million man. He signed for, you know, $20 million a year, and that's the level of service you get when you go on the road. Is the high priced veterans, they get the nice hotel rooms, I guess.
Yeah, you're not kidding, man. That's
it's pretty good. So
yeah, and you know,
all right. I don't know if there's an easy way to transition from Edwin Encarnacion's toilet to what the biggest hole in the well, I guess there you go. What the biggest hole in the Indians. Roster in the lineup is now what the biggest need is. We mentioned the bullpen. We mentioned the possibility of a backup catcher. I still think the outfield is very unsettled, and I would like to see a right-handed power-hitting bat. Somebody who hits 30 home runs and strikes out 100 times, but you know can drive in runs. And I've already made it known about my feelings about. The possibility of getting Yasiel Puig from Los Angeles. I think he would fit that role pretty well. But you know, what do you think the biggest need is? Where do you think they will strike next?
That these guys do things. You know, I think they do the unexpected. So I would think it's got to be the bullpen or the outfield. You know, you look at that bullpen, I think if they could, maybe they make a trade here, maybe make one more trade, free up a little money, you know, and maybe that's the trade where they get the outfielder you're talking about. And then I think maybe they can cherry pick a couple free agent relievers, a guy, maybe if Oliver Perez is still out there, I think he'd be a great fit. But there's a ton of relievers out there. There's a bunch of backup catchers. That you know, catchers that could back up Perez if they deem Haas isn't ready. So you know, I think that's what they might do, Joe.
Yeah, and you talk about the free agent market for those relievers is really going to be set by a couple of you know Indians guys. After you've got Craig Kimbrell, who's you know from reports is demanding $100 million in 6 years, which I don't think he's going to.
I don't
get
think that's
close
happen.
To that. But Andrew Miller's going to be at the top of that list as well, and he might well set that market for what you know trickles down to the Indians on the bottom end of that.
Yeah, you know, a lot of team. You know, I talked to a Miller's agent at the meetings, texted with him, and he said, you know, there's been a bunch of teams in on him. The Indians, you know, have told them early that. You know, they are not, you know, they can't afford to bring him back. You know, so I think the Phillies, Boston, New York, I think all those teams are kind of in on him. And they must feel good about him because, you know, as we know, this is a guy that's been on the DL five times in the last 2 years, Joe. So,
well,
you know,
well Tito sounded pretty confident. Tito wants him to go to a National League team.
Yeah, right. So I think let's just see how he is. I mean, but I think, you know, that's got to be a kind of a cautionary little – if you make that deal, you're making it, you know, with the red flag hovering above it. You know what you're getting into.
What about Cody Allen? Can he get more than just a 1 or 2 year show me deal at this point?
You know, I think, you know, probably, you know, talking to some people, I think they think he can get a multi-year. I think the market isn't as strong right now as it is for Miller. You know, a lot of teams are kind of kicking the tires on him. I think they're going to wait, you know, and see Miller and a couple other guys sign, and then you know, look at Cody. And I still think, you know, depending on the way things break, there's a chance he could come back to Cleveland, sign a 1 year deal, and kind of be the setup guy for Hand, and reestablish his market value and go out in the free agent market again in 2020. But that's a remote chance.
I would agree with that. General take on Vegas. You land on early Sunday, and right away there's the announcement of the today's game Hall of Fame inductees, which that was a whole nother, you know.
Yeah, that was a sort
of. You had Chris Russo and Tony La Russa almost coming to blows on the set of Major League Baseball Network's High Heat the other day over Harold Baines.
I missed that. Yeah.
Oh, it was. I would have loved to have seen La Russa just lay into him. They went back and forth pretty good. Obviously, La Russa defending the selection of Baines.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, that was his guy.
Being way inappropriate, saying there was cronyism and all sorts of stuff like that. But you show up for the inductions there. Do you follow Tito around? Is that what happens during the meetings, or are you free to just sort of roam the floor and?
Yeah, you know, you get there. You know, you go to the workroom. You get there, and you check into your room. You go and get your credentials. You go down and set up in the workroom because. You know, we got there like early 9:30 Vegas time, 9:30 in the morning. So you're just kind of hanging out. You're walking around the casino. I saw Tito, but that was the only time I saw Tito. Just bumped into him.
What table was he at?
He was at a table.
Blackjack, craps, whatever.
I think it was blackjack. and then I kind of just waited, tried to write some stuff. And then I was just waiting for the election. And then, as we talked, I wrote something on Baines and Lee Smith getting in. I wondered, Baines had been on the BBWA ballot for just 5 years, never mm-hmm. received more than 6% of the vote. And I think I voted for him a couple times, but I wasn't, but I consistently voted for Smith when the 15 years he was on the ballot. I voted for him every year. So, you know, that to me wasn't as big a surprise, let's say, as Baines, you know. And I think there was some favoritism, obviously, to get Baines in. I talked to Bert Blylevin, and he was on the committee, and he voted for Baines. He thought he was overlooked, and, you know, obviously Bert was overlooked. He didn't make it into his 15th year on the ballot. So I can see both points of that. You know, this guy played for a long time, had a lot of hits, but he didn't, you know, for as long as he played, he did not reach 3,000 hits. And
right.
I think that would have got him in. But there was some debate there. And I think, you know, for so long, those veteran committees never elected anybody, mm-hmm. you know. So the last 2 years, we've seen Trammell and Morris get in. Now Lee Smith and Baines get in. I think they want more players in there, you know, because I think there's a gap, you know, of players that haven't been – that there's an era, a couple of eras of players that aren't represented in the hall, and they want to get those guys in there. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, a 16-man panel, 16-person panel is a lot easier. It's a lot easier to, get guys in than, you know, or get a consensus, let's say, than when, you know, you've got 500 baseball writers voting.
Right. And does this sort of clear the way for Edgar Martinez to maybe necessarily be a shoo-in vote for the writers when the results are announced later on?
Yeah, I think so. I think he was just over 70% last year, so he should get a bump. And definitely with Baines getting in, I think they're gonna, you know, you draw the correlation, and you know, and Mariano Rivera is going to get in, so you're going to see two of the top three closers in baseball history and two of the best DHs get in on the same, you know, on the same year. That'll be cool. But then, you know,
those are two underrepresented positions in the Hall. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but most of the week, Joe, you just, you know, you meet with the team once a day, mm-hmm. you know, and it used to be you could see the team scouts and stuff and, you know, assistant GMs, you know, wandering around the lobby and you could talk to them but nobody leaves those suites anymore. You know, they all stay in the suites. And you just there's just a mob of people that, you know, you don't, you know, there are a lot of agents, so you can talk to them. But most of you're texting back and forth, you know, and you just kind of live in the workroom for a while, you know, and most of the day. And yeah, then, but I, you know, I walked around. I saw, you know, Corey Snyder. He's looking he was looking for a job. He, you know, he managed in Taiwan the last 2 years. He managed in Mexico before that. So he was looking for a job in, you know, with a big league club. He was talking to Baltimore and another club, but the Indians hadn't contacted him. Mm-hmm. I saw, you know, Jacob Cruz, who used to play for the Indians, Scott Ellerton.
Didn't Jacob Cruz catch on as a hitting instructor or assistant?
With the Pirates, and Scott Ellerton is with the Pirates as well. Kenny Schramm, who used to pitch for the Indians, you know, runs the AA team for the Astros. I see him a lot. I saw him a lot. I usually see him once at every meeting, but you see a bunch of you know, former players, and it's kind of cool. You know, it's just good. I don't think it's as newsy. It's newsmaking an event as it used to be, but you know, as soon as I say that, they make a trade, the bigger one, the biggest trades in the winter meeting.
All right. Well, and you know, I'm sitting back home watching Major League Baseball Network, which is broadcasting live from, you know, all of their shows are on set there in the lobbies and whatnot. I'm trying to catch a glimpse of Hoynsey, see if he's at one of the slot machines or yeah. you know.
I'm the only guy that went
to a waitress. I don't know.
I'm the only guy that went to Vegas and didn't place a bet. So I missed it.
Well, it worked out. So let's just set up the next week or so, as things are going to sort of take shape. Expect possibly another move here. If they get through this weekend without doing it, then probably something next week.
Yeah, I would say in the next 10 days, a week to 10 days, something's going to happen. I think, you know, you don't talk to – I mean, these guys have been talking to each other for, you know, for maybe over 7 weeks at the least, maybe a year at the most, you know, on these different proposals. You put them all together in one spot for 4 days, and the talk kind of starts percolating. And now you see the deals happen. You know, you usually see the trades that are close. Then they happen. So I would think, you know, we're going to find out one way or the other about Kluber and Bauer pretty soon here, if they're going to make a deal or if they keep them.
All right. Well, that's Paul Hoynes back from Vegas, ready to see what else pops up on the hot stove in the next coming weeks. Paul, good to talk to you, and we will hear from you again next week.
All right, Joe.